saying, "I have decreed that no one in my family can use the powers of the ancient druids." When she asked why, he responded with a grim frown. "The magic is too unpredictable and often alters in deadly ways. Foresight is not a gift, but a curse in our family."
Her father's answer bewildered her, yet she dared not defy him openly or get caught when she secretly practiced this new mystical ability the raven showed her. "The raven first sought me out," she reasoned, in favor for now using her newly discovered powers. "I must heed its warning, and if I am to assess the danger the ships pose, I need to study them up close." She had to hurry, though. The fire stoking between her sister and Belinus would soon cool. Catrin lifted her arm and looked to the raven, considering her decision.
"What do I have to fear from you? I am a Kentiasi warrior."
The raven cocked its head and gawked at her, as if ready to answer her question. She asked,
"Did the sun god send you a sign about the ships near the coast?"
When the raven mumbled some gibberish, she tapped its beak.
"What does that mean?"
The raven screeched, bobbing up and down. She smoothed its ruffled feathers.
"Were those warships offshore?"
The raven then grew still on her arm. She winced, recalling the image of the blood moon in her dream.
"Should my father beware of the warships, if that is what they are?"
The raven nodded excitedly, as if in response.
Encouraged, she asked, "If I saw through your eyes, could I learn the true reason of who they are and why they are here?"
The creature tilted its head sideways, the signal for her to enter its mind. She paused.
"What if Father learns that I've taken this next step? Will he punish me for disobeying him? For ignoring his warning?"
The raven shrieked and arched its wings. She chuckled.
"That is right. He did say to study the enemy before each encounter, but never hesitate in battle. That's what I'm doing. Doing exactly what my father expects. I am finding out if enemies are aboard the ships, but to do so, I must see through your eyes."
Catrin again hesitated. Once before, when she had melded and then disconnected from her raven, she lost consciousness. It took a while for her head to clear after that episode. If that happened again, it could spell disaster so close to the precipice. She stepped away from the cliff's edge and stared into the raven's eyes, which were glowing like amber gems. The bird's talons emitted a bolt of electric heat into her arm. A light flashed in her mind, and the raven's essence permeated her core being. She knew then that she had entered the raven's prescient mind. At first, the landscape appeared blurry until she adjusted to the raven's eyesight. Then brightly colored wildflowers dazzled her with purple hues that she was unable to detect with her human eyes. A thrill rushed through her as she sensed the bird's breast muscles contracting to flap its wings. When the raven began its thrust into flight, she felt the misty air lift the bird's outstretched wings. When the raven flew into the sky, she could see her human form that stood as motionless as a statue on the emerald hilltop clasped to the jagged precipice. The sheer cliffs below formed an impenetrable wall against the crashing waves. Beyond the cliffs was a sparsely vegetated shoreline toward which several ships were sailing and where other vessels were moored. Armored infantrymen had disembarked, waded to the shore, and were marching across the beach. On higher ground, soldiers had set up tents in a square encampment. One of the guards had a lion's head covering his helmet. In his hands was a pole with a silver eagle on top. She assumed it meant powerful animal spirits were guiding them. A palatial tent in the center of the encampment caught her eye. Its outside walls were made of twined linen sheets, violet and red, brocaded with eagles. Surrounding the central structure were crimson banners, each emblazoned with the sun god on a horse-driven chariot. At the tent's flapped entrance were two foreign noblemen attired in purple-trimmed white togas. Another man, towering over the foreigners, wore a rustic toga and plaid breeches, garments that nobles from her kingdom typically dressed in. From the back, he looked familiar, his thick, coppery hair draped over his shoulders like a lustrous wolf pelt.